passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Rewind the dynamite from the post rest in sight. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear are opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the Forbes and let them know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting here with you on a Wednesday evening coming out of the show from Nashville, Tennessee. How are you, Wei?
Doing all right, John. Yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm doing very good.
Okay, cool.
That was an exceptionally fast-paced show.
Did it feel any faster than usual?
Yes, I don't know. It did. And I'm not saying really? That as like it was rushed either. It was like all of a sudden it was 9:45 and I could not believe it. I was stunned.
Okay. They all feel pretty fast to me, these shows. Like it feels like it's the amount of, it might even be more content than we even get on Raw, but crammed into 2 hours. So it always feels like it's pretty fast.
We'll go through it, but I think almost every segment had a point to it. Like a direction that they're going.
Yeah, as you would hope. As you would hope.
Yeah, as you would hope, Wei, not as always as it appears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go segment by segment from Monday, and let's go at what had the long-term impact attached to it.
Right, yeah.
Anyway. We're going to go through a couple of news items here off the top. Wei, any kind of just thoughts just on everything involving, obviously, the big story this week was the Rhodes departure from AEW. Were you expecting anything more of an actual address of it on tonight's program? I mean, outside of a casual mention by Tony Schiavone in relation to the prior dog collar match in AEW, there was nothing that in terms of like some kind of a farewell or even addressing the story that happened.
Yeah, no, nothing at all. Kind of almost playing it off as if it was just a pretty common occurrence of a character, you know, not being around temporarily, you know, nothing to signify that he wasn't going to be there permanently. I think AEW at this point, like they know their audience knows everything that's actually going on. Maybe they felt the need not to make a bigger deal out of it than it already was.
I don't think that's possible.
I was expecting if we were going to get a Dan Lambert segment, you know, that promo would have been really, I think, the one opportunity I would have probably guaranteed something to be said because he was in the midst of a feud with Cody and Brandy. But we didn't get one of those on this particular episode. So, nothing really.
Coming out of today, we did get the NXT numbers from Vengeance Day on Tuesday night. They were certainly improved from last week, but still well below what a USA Network show was averaging, much less a special show that they had built up. They did 525,000 viewers and a 0.11 in the demo, 145,000 viewers. So compared to last week, They were up 31% in viewers, up almost 50% in 18 to 49. I mean, some of these increases from last week, dude, 18 to 34 was up 135% from last week. So they certainly found more people this week on sci-fi. But when you compare them to the average viewership that they do on a USA Network show, like for this year, they're averaging like 626,000 viewers and 178 in the demo. So there's no doubt in my mind that if this had been on USA Network, they would have done significantly better. But I think we all knew that going in here. This was a choice that they opted to go with this show on sci-fi. But nonetheless, it was, I thought, like a very easy to digest show on Tuesday night.
I thought so too. I actually enjoyed the show quite a bit. And Andrew Thompson and I, in today's news update, we went through our thoughts in a bit more detail. But yeah, it doesn't really surprise me. I mean, it's a combination of people maybe getting a bit more familiar with the sci-fi and also people making a bit more effort to watch this particular branded special.
Yes. And on the Cody front, Justin Barrasso at SI.com had put out a report today. And one aspect of the report that he noted was, while Rhodes was never intended to overstay his welcome in the world title picture, one key factor that led to this exit was losing all responsibilities involving booking. This is a role where Tony Khan, who is the head of creative, had taken full reign. Originally, Rhodes was part of that process and goes on to say that as great as Dusty Rhodes was as a performer, his contributions as a booker are an integral part of his legacy. For Rhodes, AEW represented another chance to pay homage to his father as a booker while other also further cementing his legacy. Losing that opportunity in AEW hurt Rhodes more than any loss he suffered in the ring. So, you know, going back to the history, like the big change seemed to be at the end of 2019. So pretty long time removed from this, when it was more so Tony Khan taking sort of a more leadership position and, you know, making it very clear he was going to be the head booker at that time. Now, the level of contribution that Cody had is going to be certainly discussed. It seemed that he was someone that was very hands-on with his programs. But I guess this is an aspect of the story. Maybe the amount of input that he was wanting to provide versus how much was going to be received. But obviously, I think there's going to be probably tons of fallout in the months, even years to come, of, you know, getting to some of the root causes about such a massive move like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to like maybe want to make too many concrete opinions about what essentially might be hearsay. You know, We don't truly know the reasons why he would have left. And I mean, that's really up to him to discuss in a future interview, maybe on a Steve Austin Broken Skull Sessions or something, or some sort of tell-all. But I'm sure it's a number of factors. I mean, I'm sure partially it could be financial, and partially it could be, you know, what Justin Barrasso noted about losing creative control.
Or a collection of a lot of different things.
Yeah, who knows, you know? But, I mean, you know, obviously going to the WWE, I can't see that being remedied at all. If anything, I mean, he'd be losing a whole lot.
WWE is not where you're necessarily going with the idea of just having autonomy over your creative. Like, that is...
It's the opposite.
It's the complete
opposite. Even if you're the father's the owner's son-in-law, you're not guaranteed that spot.
Great point.
I mean, so you know, it could be just maybe when you get into these sort of negotiations, it might have been a case of just so much ego being involved that if you're not getting what you wanted, the alternative, even if it's not as good as, you know, the lesser option by sticking with the original person that you're with. It could have been just that. Who knows? You know, we've yet to see how this will work out. It could be a positive for Cody. It could be a positive for AEW, or it could be a negative for both of them. I mean, so much I think is still up in the air.
Do you expect Cody to do one of those like big sit down interviews at some point before WrestleMania, like a big kind of state of Cody Rhodes kind of interview?
You know, I mean, I think so much of it would depend on whether or not he'd be a part of the WWE. And if he was, I mean, one of these Broken Skull sessions the weekend of a WrestleMania, I think would be a huge draw for a Peacock audience. I think knowing Cody, he'd probably want to maximize the value of this sort of air of mystery that's around him right now. And whenever he eventually does the tell-all interview, I'm sure he'd want to monetize and create a great deal of buzz around that as well, whether it be on his own platforms or through, you know, whatever future employer he might be with.
Yeah, I will be very curious to see in the lead up to Revolution, where you would assume Tony Khan is going to be doing a lot of media to promote that event. And this, to me, is going to be front and center and asked about in every interview. And that'll be interesting to see, because Tony Khan is like, he is very good at, no matter what question you throw at him, that he's going to pivot to the pay-per-view, to the match that he is promoting. And he's going to be asked so much about Cody Rhodes that has nothing to do with promoting the pay-per-view, but that's going to be at the front of any interviewer's line of questioning. Like, that's the only thing you could be going for immediately.
You know, we have to remember, like, I mean, I'm sure there was a real, and there probably continues to still be a real personal relationship between these two, working side by side for the better part of the 3 years. And, you know, at least part of the directive for the reason why we heard nothing about Cody this week, I think maybe at least is partially because, you know, he at this point, it might be still kind of raw and, you know, like, better, things are better left unsaid, you know, even if it is supposed to be positive. But I mean, I have a feeling if he is asked, unless, you know, there's a shot the other way, I have a feeling Tony's going to keep it pretty, like, positive and kind of like vague, you know,
or defer to Cody.
Yeah. Yeah. To see what he says. Sure.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, those are just a few of the news items. We're going over those now because on Thursday, for the Post Daily News Update, it's going to be myself, David Bixenpan, and Brandon Thurston. And we're going to be spending the show discussing some of the kind of overarching details of the WWE's deal with Saudi Arabia. It is now 4 years into this deal, which was announced as a 10-year deal. And there'll probably be a year tacked onto this because of the events missed due to the pandemic. But just looking at, you know, the controversy that it has invited, the questions that has been asked of it, and what the real impact has been on the company, not just from a financial standpoint, but as well of the perception of this deal and how that has even changed from year one to year four. So I thought it was like a good time to kind of sit down and kind of assess just the overall relationship that the WWE has with the government of Saudi Arabia, and as well, like the amount of people out there that have just kind of accepted these as regular shows. I do think that is a strong amount of people at this point that do not, you know, I think that there is a certain negativity attached to these shows. But wouldn't you say, Wei, it's dramatically reduced from those first shows?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and part of that is human nature. Like, when I think we, I suppose, realize we're powerless enough to not have them do anything. I mean, they're committed to this thing. And even in the face of the greatest amount of controversy that I can imagine this entire deal getting after Jamal Khashoggi and them continuing on. I mean, even in the face of being, having their talent being kept behind because of a disagreement with their own government and scaring the family members of their talent. Even in the face of that, they're pursuing
forget all those details. Like, at its core, it's like, as well, like, SmackDown did not have like roster members for like a live broadcast. Like, you needed to fly in your NXT talent at the very last minute. And on top of it, like, you're getting a taped episode of SmackDown this week to accommodate this as well. So it'd be very interesting to see as well, like, from like a Fox perspective, like, what their viewpoint is after that episode in 2019. And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, you're in business with a company and these are our relationships, and this is something that we're doing it on a Saturday. So Fox gets a taped show this week.
Yeah, despite all of these things, you know, like, it doesn't seem to make a dent. You know, the next quarterly earnings call, they're trumpeting their next records, right? So how much energy, you know, is a viewer able to give before they kind of realize it's futile? But of course, like, I think there's always a whole lot to continue to remind us about exactly what this is. And so for that reason, I look forward to hearing your conversation with two very esteemed journalists tomorrow.
So that is tomorrow at 1 Eastern, followed by Wei Ting and Jordan Goodman live at 3 Eastern on Thursday. They will be presenting the wellness policy, and they are going to be joined by the birthday man himself, our birthday man, Neil Flanagan, on Thursday.
Yeah, that is correct. Neil Flanagan joins us. We'll be talking about the topic of the inner critic. You know, this seems to be a subject that has been brought up a few times in us asking for discussions and topics for the wellness policy. So this was something that actually Neil suggested a while back. So it's something I'm sure a lot of us deal with, including myself. So we'll be having a bit of a conversation about it at 3 o'clock Eastern time. I'll send the Zoom link sometime tomorrow, and that'll be available for all patrons at Post Wrestling Cafe, and also available for free afterwards for anybody who clicks on the link at postwrestling.com.
All right, and then Friday we'll have the new show. Rewind to SmackDown will be Friday night with Wei Ting and Kate from Montreal. And are you guys starting an hour early because of no Rampage at 10?
Oh, that's a good question. I would think so. Yeah, I'm going to have to double check with Kate, who's actually in the chat room right now. So, Kate, just give me a thumbs up if you're okay to start at 10:15 p.m. But that is probably the case. And before we finish with the plugs, I actually wanted to make mention of the latest edition of Postmarks that's about to come out with David and Bruce. They are talking to none other than the professor, Chris Ely himself. Apparently, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but apparently this was a really interesting one where Chris gives some updates on, you know, recent health issues that he's been struggling with and really just his entire history of a wrestling fandom and listening to podcasts. So I look forward to that. That'll be available also for free on the Post Wrestling Cafe feed this weekend.
Okay, and one more to squeeze in. We're live on Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time is when we're going to go live. We will go through the Elimination Chamber. I might get a chance to watch the main event of the New Japan show that day, but we'll mainly focus on the WWE show. So that's Saturday, 8 Eastern for Double Double Ice Cap and Espresso members of the Post Wrestling Cafe. Let us now get into Dynamite from the Municipal Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. No Cody in the opening intro. They were very quick.
I mean, you know, they took him off a bunch of posters for current on sales and for Revolution and whatnot. So, yeah, you would certainly imagine they would have taken a bit of a shame. He had, you know, collected quite the highlight reel for himself in the past 3 years, right?
I mean, just the last couple of months between like the fire and the cutter spot with several spots in the Guevara match. So, right. Yeah, I mean, it was brought up that I don't know if you could find like two better matches to bookend your tenure between the Dustin Rhodes match at Double or Nothing and the Sammy Guevara ladder match.
God, you're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, I do think the man, you know, looking at his collection of work, like it is certainly a bit underrated, because when you think about Cody, you don't immediately think about his in-ring quality. But I think
he worked his ass off in all of his big matches, like more than a lot of guys in that position, like doing fire, like that was nuts. And I mean,
kind of unnecessary in my opinion, but sure, maybe he had other things in mind.
Yeah.
Maybe he had other things in mind, knowing, you know, how things ended up. So yeah, but we'll keep talking about Cody, I'm sure, in the weeks to come.
Yeah, and we'll bring it up in the main event, though. There was that one tease for the Crossroads that Guevara did have.
It was actually an entire sequence, but yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah. So immediately, the show starts with CM Punk seated in the middle of the ring, and he's wearing an MJF shirt, and everyone is chanting for him, and he goes back decades and says that I'm straight edge, I'm alcohol free and drug free, and that means I'm better than you. And he says, and this elicited some boos because some fans here who were probably like three deep were not appreciating this in Nashville. And he said, those were the words I first said over 20 years ago, and it became the foundation of my career. It inspired a next generation of people, some who wanted to become wrestlers, become straight edge. But then there's MJF, who tried to walk and talk like me, but he can't think like me. And when he beat me in Chicago twice, he says, I'm not mad, I'm proud. But in fact, MJF did not learn the lessons that were being taught to him. He's still shitty little Max from shitty little Long Island. And he thanks Jon Moxley for the assist last week. And now, with that win, he gets to pick the time, the place, and the type of match when he gets to face MJF again. He is picking Orlando, Florida, March the 6th at Revolution. And the type of match, he said he considered a cage match, but he knows that Wardlow can climb and MJF can run, and notes that when he has lost matches in the past, that's when I've learned. Win or learn, as John Kavanaugh used to say, Wei.
Among many other people, but yes.
And he cites MJF wanting to be Piper in Portland. So he has asked MJF to be my Valentine as he reveals a dog collar from this box in front of him. The greatest weaving of a stipulation with a holiday to Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine. This was a masterful setup to this dog collar match by CM Punk. I thought this promo was amazing. This was terrific.
He is, I mean, forget Cody. You know, Punk has been on fire, especially throughout this MJF feud. I mean, I think he's been good, like, since he returned, but I think, like, being in there with MJF has really sharpened him, and doing this every single week, you know, has really sharpened him back into, I think, as good as we've ever heard CM Punk, and he's coming up with promos like this that are immediately captivating and memorable, and does a great job of getting you excited for the, like, they're making this dog collar stipulation feel like it's, they keep repeating, it's one of the most dangerous stipulations, whereas, like, in 2022, getting like a dog collar match over, I mean, yes, of course, Cody and Brody Lee, they mentioned that, but we haven't really had a whole lot of it. And if you just strictly told me dog collar match, I don't know if I'd get that excited. But, you know, this promo I thought was really strong, and the way that they promised how dangerous this match was going to be has me very excited about what they're going to do creatively.
Okay, this is the ultimate promotional tie-in that they need to do, okay, to push this.
This is the Channing Tatum movie?
No, this is not going to be dog. This is way better. Okay. Dog collar. Maybe that can be the sequel with Channing Tatum and Dominic. So Monday, Ring of Honor announces CM Punk is going into the ROH Hall of Fame. And that weekend, AEW says, hey, we'll let Punk send you a message. Hell, maybe he'll do a surprise appearance, but you're going to do your 60-minute episode, your syndicated television, and you're going to give people the Raven dog collar match and the Jimmy Rave dog collar match. And for an hour in syndication, everyone can see Punk's past dog collar matches to sell the violence that we are going to deliver.
Interesting.
This pay-per-view.
Wait, was the Raven one in ROH as well?
They did one in ROH.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Okay. I don't know if Ring of Honor would like devote that much time to it, but that's interesting. Or at least put it online.
At least put them online. I think the Raven one is online. I don't know about the Jimmy. Well, I'm sure you can find the Jimmy Rave one, just not on their official channel, I don't think.
All right.
But they're bloody. They're very bloody, as I'm sure this one will be. So MJF just comes out, and Punk has this. He still has the box here that's holding the dog collar, and he's just got all his valuables in here. And he pulls out the photo that everyone has seen of young MJF meeting CM Punk at an autograph signing, and Punk says, this was the greatest day of your life. For me, it was Friday. And on March 6th, it's going to be the worst day of your life. And for me, it'll just be Sunday. The ring is not going to be stained with your spray tan. It's going to be stained with your blood. And MJF doesn't even get a word out. He just storms off and leaves. And this is when Shivani notes, we've only had one dog collar match in AEW, and it was Cody Rhodes against Brody Lee. And this was a outstanding segment. I thought Punk was terrific here.
Really great. Absolutely. And I thought MJF was great with what little he had to do. I mean, MJF being speechless is, I think, about as much selling as, you know, you should have from somebody who can't stop talking like an MJF. So it was another week and another segment where the babyface got the upper hand. And that's kind of refreshing, especially for a babyface who's coming out for revenge, you know, after suffering a big defeat.
Yeah. Terrific segment. So we've got the match set up for Revolution in a couple of weeks' time. Shivani is with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus and Christian Cage, and they announced there will be a triple threat match at Revolution for the tag titles, and the teams are going to be decided over the next 2 weeks. Jungle Boy says, I love a good three-way.
Yeah.
He's into sex, Way.
Multiple so people. Think. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, it feels like a pretty lame for I don't, yeah, like it's not like Jungle Boy, like, to, you know, brag about having a lot of sex. I mean, is that a part of the character? I mean, it's almost like dorky, and he's not been a character that has been.
It was a pretty cringeworthy line here. It was very, I don't know. It felt very awkward, but nonetheless, he's cool, guys. Christian says there's going to be some changes to the tag division in the next few weeks, but one thing will stay the same, and that are the champions. So there's going to be a tag team battle royal next week, and then in 2 weeks' time, a casino battle royale.
Yeah. Okay. So the battle royale and then the casino battle royale. So what are the differences? The casino is like the rumble, right? Like they have four yes. tiers.
Yeah. We'll have the different cards all represented.
But are they all going to be different teams? They are, right? Because, yeah, Red Dragon and Young Bucks were like, you guys enter 1 week and then we'll enter the other. Is that correct?
Yeah, but they left it that both were going to be in next week's.
Right. Okay. So how many tag teams do they have that they could fill the, like, two?
They have
looks?
A lot of tag teams, and they'll probably have some just, you know, makeshift teams or ones that are not really, you know, focused upon. Mm. You need a lot of okay. teams for these next 2 weeks. I guess you could have, if you lose next week, you could be in the one the following week, too.
Well, what's my incentive?
Well, you get two chances at it.
Okay.
Brian Danielson and Lee Moriarty.
Hey, you forgot Sabrina the Teenage Witch was in
I've got it right here. Yes, oh, my sorry. First note here for the match was Sabrina the Teenage Witch was there in the front row. A big wrestling fan.
That's right. Yes.
Yes. So this is a great match. Early on. Lee Moriarty is put in a Romero special, and then he counters out of it. He's going for the Border City stretch that Alex Shelley taught him, and Danielson gets to the rope and just kicks Lee while he's tied up in the ropes, drapes him, and right into a knee strike. They go through the break. They're trading. They lock legs, and then they're going upside down and striking one another. This was like Wei Ting at his peak in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, I don't know if I could dream of pulling off a sequence like this, but it was very impressive.
And the crowd went to another level during this spot. They loved it.
This crowd was fantastic.
Dude, Nashville was amazing for 2 hours. They were a great, great crowd. This was like, I think they were around just under 5,000 as of today. And that was, man, they sounded loud.
They sounded even bigger than 5,000. Yeah. And they were clearly anticipating this match. And this was the type of sequence that I think, you know, delivered on the technical magic that they were looking for.
They trade big strikes, rolling elbow by Danielson, and then Moriarty gets the Border City stretch. Danielson locks the leg into the suplex to break free. Busaiku knee, takes the wrist and stomps down, and then finally applies the triangle and does the Nate Diaz triangle flex, and he submits him in 12 minutes and 13 seconds.
With the top-down camera angle, too.
Yes. Yeah. Which I'm pretty sure they shot Nate Diaz like that when he won it, when he used it for the first time. So it's a great way to shoot this. And it went 12-13. This did not disappoint. I was really into this match.
Very good match. Yeah. I think it totally lived up to what we were expecting of these two on a TV broadcast. Creative technical wrestling, hard hitting looking strikes. And on top of that, an incredible atmosphere for this match to take place in. And, you know, Lee Moriarty has already had matches with CM Punk and Bryan Danielson in his very short stay here in AEW. And I thought he looked awesome here. I think he's living up to the hype of, you know, being this young technical wizard, somebody who, you know, might reach the level of stardom of a Bryan Danielson. But Bryan, to me, is like a glimpse of what a former wrestler who, you know, was like a Lee Moriarty can achieve, because he is now the complete package veteran, showed great technical ability, but also incredible, I think, heel charisma here, and his ability to control the crowd throughout the match I thought was really strong. I thought his heel presence was really strong, almost feeling like Suzuki-like to me. So he's doing some great work right now.
Danielson gets on the microphone and he addresses the crowd. He came to teach Lee a lesson about violence, but he also wants an answer from John Moxley. So Moxley comes out and talks about when he was young, poor, and angry, and trying to take down the mythical American Dragon on a small indie show. And he talks about that night, Danielson being late due to the weather, and Tracy Smothers having to kill time, talking in the ring. Danielson arrived. I gave everything I had, but I came up short. We'd have more matches, but I still came up short, and I've never beaten Bryan Danielson. So I was really excited when you came to AEW to face you when everyone else was scared. And he admits that the two of us joining together, it could be awesome. We could take these young guys, leave a legacy behind. I can't think of one good reason to say no to your offer, but maybe this offer is because you don't want to stand across the ring from Jon Moxley. So I'm not saying yes, but I'm not saying no. I'm going to leave it up to you. And I don't stand side by side with anyone until I bleed with them first. So, he wants to exchange fluids with this man and bleed, and then maybe they can form a friendship.
You know, so we were wondering what the direction for this whole thing was going to be. Are we strictly going to the match, or are we going to go to the faction and then the match? They're surprising us. They're going to the match and then potentially the faction afterwards.
And then to the match afterwards.
Probably.
Maybe again.
Probably. Yes. So, whatever. As many excuses to see these two in a match, I think the better. It seems like they're going the friendly rivalry route, but, you know, two crazy madmen who are willing to beat the shit out of each other before shaking hands and deciding to start the faction. I thought Moxley sounded awesome here. And you know what? I looked it up quickly. Mad Pro Wrestling from Chillicothe, Ohio in 2007 featured Bryan Danielson versus Jon Moxley with Tracy Smothers on the same card. So,
Tracy Smothers work that night?
Sam Hain.
Okay.
You familiar?
I'm not familiar with Sam Hain, no.
Yeah, also on the show, it was, for the NPW heavyweight title, Drake Younger versus Madman Pondo. And that's
what about Josh Prohibition? Was he on an Ohio card?
I don't think so. Although Dave Crist and Jake Crist, known as Irish Airborne, did take on the Black and Blue crew of Cyrus Poe and Tommy Chill. Tommy Chill. What a name.
Maybe he'll awesome. Come for an open challenge.
Maybe. But yeah, hey, man, if they got footage of this, I hope they use it in the little build up here. I love it when they bring stuff up like this and draws upon a very big, long history between these two that I don't think you would have realized if you didn't, you know, if you had only seen their WWE work.
Well, maybe Dragon Gate USA can launch a Hall of Fame and get television, and then they can air Moxley and Danielson from Dragon Gate USA.
I don't know if they would have. Doesn't WWE own all that now?
I think that would. Yeah, that would all be under the same. Like they got the Evolve library. I don't know how the Dragon Gate.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I think Dragon Gate would have the Dragon Gate USA footage, wouldn't they?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fine.
So start a Dragon Gate Hall of Fame. Wardlow and Max Caster. Actually, they did a recap of Keith Lee's arrival last week. And then Wardlow versus Max Caster was the next qualifying match in the Face the Revolution ladder match. Sean Spears comes out in a Nashville Predators jersey. And I guess they just wanted to make it very clear that the Acclaimed are the heels. And Wardlow is the guy you're going to cheer. Because Caster came out and said that Wardlow's overrated like Nashville hot chicken. They were like, go to hell. They're out in the first round like the Titans, and you're not a man. You're just MJF's bitch boy. I didn't think this was one of his stronger reps.
It was okay. I mean, it's hard to come up with a new one every single week, and he's doing stuff online as well, so I cut him some slack.
Bowens tries to trip Wardlow from the floor. They quickly went through picture in picture. The Acclaimed attacked Wardlow on the floor, but he comes back. Max uses a chain to stop a powerbomb as the referee misses it. Mike drop for a two count, and then Max runs into Bowens on the apron, is hit with the first powerbomb, and the crowd is just electric here. Wardlow is playing to the audience, sets him up for two more powerbombs, and wins the match in 5 minutes and 15 seconds. So we have Wardlow and Keith Lee qualifying for the ladder match so far.
Crowd loves Wardlow, you know.
This symphony spot is just a terrific idea that just gets hotter and hotter every time he does it, and it just totally works for any crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, I wondered, like, doing the finish that they did, like, you know, were certain crowds going to, get tired perhaps of the constant, you know, teasing of whether or not he was going to leave the group? And the answer is no. They're as hot for Wardlow as ever, and they want to see him become a babyface, I think, more than ever.
We go to Bowens jumps Wardlow from behind, and then he's just grabbed and he hits him with a powerbomb. So the crowd chanted again, and Sean Spears came in with the chair attack. Into the back, Tony Schiavone is with Mercedes Martinez, Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Rebel. And Baker tells Mercedes, no losing tonight. And I brought you here to finish Thunder Rosa, and then Baker will become the most powerful woman in AEW. And she also has the best sensei. And in walks Martin Cove from the Karate Kid franchise. Way, I'm going to be completely honest. I had no earthly idea who this individual was.
I had no clue either.
I had to pause and I had to go and look this up.
You and I are probably the only two people listening.
No, we're not. Because when I tweeted this out, I got a fair amount of responses of people who have never watched The Karate Kid either.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen them, nor have I. I think I've seen one or two episodes of Cobra Kai, but I mean, I would not have recognized Sensei Kreese just by looking at him. But I'm sure plenty of people did.
Plenty did. Yeah, mm-hmm. this was like a fun little tie-in that they did here. And Mercedes says, it's time to go murder a bitch. And Baker asks Sensei, what should we do if she fails? And he says, finish her. No mercy.
Which I'm assuming was a line from the films.
I'll take your word for it, yes. Shivani's in the ring and brings out a Hangman Page, and he gets interrupted immediately by Adam Cole, who mentions all the battles that Hangman's been through with Kenny Omega, Danielson, and Archer. And Cole has also been a champion everywhere he's gone. It's unfortunate that your reign is going to have to end. And Page mentions how his friend, it's Cole that gets the receiving end of this, because Page brings up how difficult it must have been that all your friends built a wrestling empire without you. And this is the only championship that you will never hold. Cole then brings up the Young Bucks and hasn't heard them talk about Page in weeks. And what happened to the Dark Order? You used to be associated with them and nothing's happened for months. What kind of friend are you? And Page admits, I'm not perfect. But you, Cole, don't have the best track record with friends either. We all make mistakes, and getting into the ring with me tonight might be your biggest one. Cole says he's a great wrestler, great champion, and whenever we are in the same company, though, you're always known as the other Adam. And one day we're going to fight, and it'll be with respect, and may the best man win. So they shake hands, and Cole goes to leave. He has a smile on his face, and that's when Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish jump Page from behind. Cole gets in on the attack. The Dark Order runs out, followed by security, including Officer Dominic Guarini here, who was part of the security entourage. And the security just got mauled by Preston Vance, who they are setting up for a match with Adam Cole on Friday. So he just destroyed all the security members. And not the announcement of Page versus Cole, but certainly seems like that is imminent for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, you would think so. Absolutely. Yeah, we had heard reports that Violence is Forever was there. And I mean, at least, you know, partially to do security duty for it looks like Adam Cole here. So cool. I hope they get a good look, and I hope they get a good chance. But I thought this segment was great. I think, you know, for me, like when Cole challenged Page, I was like, okay, yeah, it feels like, you know, next in line, Page is probably going to be Cole, and then we'll move on to MJF, right? But this really deepened the feud to mean a whole lot more than just simply, you know, another stepping stone for Page on his way to defending the championship to MJF. They deepened their history. I had totally forgotten that these two were, like, you know, in Ring of Honor and in the same faction together. And them just kind of, you know, Page throwing out the line about how it must be weird being in the ring with your Bullet Club buddy, Ring of Honor roommate. And I think if you knew the hierarchy of the Bullet Club at the time, I mean, Page really, I think, was an underling, you know, compared to Adam Cole. So now to see, you know, the guy who used to be under him now as the champion, I think definitely deepens that story. And then for Page to be able to say, you know, you're back then you were just the other Adam, I think directly plays to the character that we've learned thus far of Hangman Page and how he struggles with his security of you know, being relevant in comparison to his, you know, former elite rivals or friends. So for that line to be the line that sets him off, you know, putting his jacket or belt down to go up and want to physically attack Cole, I think makes a whole lot of sense. And again, you know, this one segment, I think, deepened the rivalry pretty well.
Yeah, this was a good segment between these two. Like, there was a lot of promo segments on this show, but I thought they were all very strong building up your programs.
I agree. Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Chris Jericho and Jake Hager against Santana and Ortiz. And before the match began, Eddie Kingston made his return, coming out. So in the beginning of the match, Santana and Ortiz are double-teaming Jericho. Once Hager gets in, he's in there with Ortiz, and he's just screaming, "Why? Why?
We're boys."
Why?
Yeah,
Hager was
much.
Very broken up by this, yeah.
Has he done this in a Bellator fight?
No.
He's sure?
Yeah, he has more awkward lines, usually in his post-fight speech. He hits a Hager bomb. They go through the break. Santana gets the hot tag, runs into a code breaker by Jericho, and Jericho calls for the lion salt. But when he jumps off the middle rope, Ortiz grabs him. They have the move scouted, and Santana comes up, side rush and leg sweep off the middle rope. And then Hager is sent to the floor. They hit the street sweeper, but Jericho kicks out at two. Santana hits a leaping cannonball off the back of Ortiz, and Jericho catches him and ends up turning it into the lion tamer. Kingston is urging him to reach the rope. He finally does. Crowd goes wild when he reaches the rope. So Jericho does the springboard dropkick, sending Kingston off the apron. Judas Effect gets ducked, and Ortiz strikes Jericho from the apron. Discus Lariat. Santana pins Chris Jericho.
Yeah, very good match. You know, and very strong storytelling repercussions here. It continues to heat up a potential split between the Inner Circle, and it also continues to heat up Jericho and Eddie Kingston. I like the fact that they're still booking Jericho very strong and making him look like, you know, like Santana and Ortiz working together to beat and pin Chris Jericho still feels like a really big deal. So yeah, I thought it was a successful match all around.
Yeah, and a notable pinfall here for Santana. And after the match, Jericho and Kingston continued to brawl on the floor and had to be separated. So that certainly feels like the direction for the pay-per-view with Kingston and Jericho.
Yeah, and what of Santana and Ortiz?
I mean, I guess you could get others involved. You could do a multi-man, but it seems like the focus is more Jericho-Kingston at this point. I wouldn't want to throw like Guevara into this just to make it a six man. I would think that Guevara's got his own program set up at the moment.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Yeah, who would be attached? Because it wouldn't be anybody else. Yeah,
Mike Tyson,
the other Inner Circle member. Yeah, it would just be a bit of a shame if Proud and Powerful, coming off of all of this, didn't get a more prominent role, because I feel like they're the ones that need the spotlight the most.
Well, maybe they get into this tag match. Maybe they're like, they have to be in one of these battle royals.
Yeah, it could be that too. You're right.
Like, you have the Bucks going for the tag titles. You have Santana and Ortiz in the mix.
Mm-hmm. Red Dragon potentially.
Yeah. I mean, you have no shortage of tag teams, but maybe you do like Santana and Ortiz, the Bucks, and Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. That's a pretty great setup.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the Cutler Cam. And Adam Cole is with the Bucks, O'Reilly, and Fish. And they're asking the Young Bucks, "Where were you guys out there?" And they state that beating up Hangman would be like beating a dead horse at this point. Adam Cole announces he's taking on 10 of the Dark Order this Friday. And they mention the two battle royals over the next 2 weeks. And they're asking Kyle, "Where have you been?" He said, "I was busy being the father of the year as I just had my first baby." So Matt says, "That's great. You had a baby. I've got two." And Nick comes in, "I've got three." And Adam Cole said, "I have none." And stopped the battle over how many kids each person has. So the Bucks and Red Dragon end up being in next week's battle royal. They'll be in together. And then they leave in opposite directions. And Cole is left there in the middle. And Cutler just goes, "Which way are you going to go, Adam?" It was a great line. I like Brandon Cutler.
I like the fact that they're just shortening it to, "Let's go to the Cutler Cam," rather than, "You rolling, Brandon?"
They still did that. They still did that at the beginning.
They did.
They still check in with Brandon at the beginning. They want to make sure they're alive.
Never mind. I take it back. Sure. Yeah, I get a sick pleasure out of it now, too. What was interesting here was, you know, the Bucks' explanation for not joining in on the Page attack. And it could simply be, you know, maybe they felt like, okay, they wanted they didn't want the numbers advantage too much for the Elite against the Dark Order. But I'm also wondering if we're going to get a potential Bucks and Page reunion somewhere down the line. Maybe a Bucks, you know, babyface turn as they go up against the former Undisputed Era, perhaps.
I think that you're looking at that, and then it's like where, and potentially Omega with them as well, as you have like this other like offshoot unit with like Cole, Jay White, O'Reilly, and Fish.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Jay White will stick around for that long?
He's going to be like in and out when they need him. I'm not expecting him to be someone that's there weekly, but maybe they just have, you know, he's attached to this, but maybe not like a weekly figure.
Yeah, I just wonder if he'd be like sort of a drop-in person, you know, like what Ishii was or Kenta.
Best friend Tomohiro Ishii.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Did you hear they're doing a Minoru Suzuki and Biff Busick? At WrestleCon. WrestleMania.
So he's coming back?
Yes, Suzuki's coming back. Ishii's coming back for that weekend. I think Ishii's going to be here because he's got WrestleMania weekend dates, and then they've got the Chicago show, which is 2 weeks later. So I imagine Ishii's going to be here that whole time.
Okay, so I mean, there's a lot of potential, of course, for him to pop up on any of these other shows.
Yep, definitely. Mm. No disqualification match. Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez. Thunder Rosa came out dressed up like the bride from Kill Bill. This was maybe the best gear I've seen in 2022.
Worked really cool. Yeah. I feel like plenty of people have tried to pull this. Like, you know, Becky Lynch, I guess, famously. But
that's right. Yes.
Yeah, they both look great. Yeah.
So they're brawling on the floor, and Martinez gets Irish whipped into the barricade. And this barricade is not attached to anything. So the barricade just goes down, and she just plops down on her back. This looked like the most unfun back bump you are going to take, right onto a guardrail and cement.
There were a lot of unfun looking bumps throughout the course of this match.
This was rough at times, but entertaining throughout this
entertaining,
match.
Entertaining, sure.
This crowd was like really into this. They go into the crowd, and Thunder Rosa climbs onto this railing. And dude, this railing is just shaking. I gasped. I thought she was just going to spill here, but she ended up completing the dive. But my God, this railing looked so scary.
From what I read, it seemed like there was an assist from the fan as well that was nearby holding it steady. So,
well, that fan deserves tickets to the next 10 pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's great for them to save, because this looked really scary the way she was leaning up, and it was the kind where she's like, well, I'm going to finish this regardless. And that's when, man, sometimes disaster strikes. We come back after the picture in picture. There's weapons all over the ring, and there's a table that is lodged going downward off the apron to the floor. And Martinez suplexes Thunder Rosa off the edge of the apron, but the table, it like cracks but doesn't break, and they just slide down. This was like not a fun table spot at all.
It actually looked like a bit of a fun slide, like a.
I guarantee you, your lower back would not be saying "we" at the thrill of this fall. So in the ring, there's a trash can placed over Martinez's head. They hit a running drop. Thunder Rosa hits the running drop kick. They fight on the turnbuckle. Martinez hits a spider German suplex and then comes off the top, but slips coming down with the elbow drop. And Thunder Rosa recovers from that crucifix bomb and a fire thunder driver onto a sea of chairs in the ring to win this in 9 minutes and 31 seconds. I know there was like a lot of awkwardness to this match, but given like in a match like this, I don't want it to necessarily look smooth. I don't want to see anyone get hurt, but at the same time, this was not to me something where I was watching this and thinking, oh, it's sloppy or, oh, this is bad. It was just like, it was violent and it was, to me, like it certainly did.
It was
not,
ugly.
Yes, it was ugly, but worked for like the type of match they were trying to get over here, that this is completely, it's mayhem. This is out of control.
I agree. I mean, it's similar to what we brought up with in the Michael Oku interview where, you know, I think you have to look at botches not strictly as like we're not judging, you know, figure skating here, where everything is, should be graded on how technically great it looks in order for it to be complete. We should be grading these things on how entertaining they are and how well they fit the story. And the story of this one is, you know, these two are going to go to war and attack each other in unfamiliar environments. And it certainly looked unfamiliar because there were plenty of times in this match where things could have gone awfully wrong. That Spider German landing did not look fun for Thunder Rosa. So hopefully everybody feels okay and recovered and is able to good to go afterwards. But as a story itself, did they achieve the idea that these two went to war with each other? Yeah, I think so. You know, I think they both took a huge amount of damage and it was entertaining, if not the prettiest match, but maybe they didn't set out to have the prettiest match.
No, no. This is probably one that they will feel tomorrow with many examples of that. But the post-match saw Thunder Rosa lift up Mercedes Martinez, and they both gave each other a sign of respect. And then Baker comes out, followed by Hayter and Rebel. And Baker just walks up to Sensei Robert Cove in the front row. I told you she was weak. Now finish her. So Hayter and Rebel attack Thunder Rosa, and Baker's got a pipe and hands it off to Mercedes Martinez to use on Thunder Rosa. But she hesitates, so Hayter takes out Mercedes Martinez. They just perform a hit here on Mercedes. And that was the end of this segment. It spins off Baker with Thunder Rosa, but also really establishes Mercedes Martinez as now a foe of these three.
I like
maybe Mercedes and Jamie Hayter, I think, would be a match to do on TV immediately.
Yeah, they've already set that up, you know, even as like within the same faction, they had a rivalry going on. So I thought that was, in terms of story, I thought all of that was really well done, you know, from setup to where they are today. And, you know, in a short amount of time, I think they've developed quite a Mercedes Martinez's character pretty well in that she is somebody who, I guess, can be bought, but even she has her morality when it comes to somebody that she has bled with, you know, very much in the same vein as John Moxley is in Bryan Danielson. So I think they built up to the mutual respect angle really well, and I'm really excited for the tag match. I mean, of course, we do have to kind of forget about Hayter's own breakup story right now. That seemed to be completely, at least, you know, shoved to the side for the time being with her and Britt Baker. But it's okay. You know, I'm looking forward to the tag matches.
Yeah, this group, we've got like 84 matches lined up down the road.
Yeah, who else? Statlander a part of this?
Not necessarily here. Yeah, we need a follow up on the adoption promo this week, don't we?
The adoption promo, I've forgotten all about that.
With Layla Hirsch and Chris Statlander.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe this week Statlander will be like, I was a little out of line last week. You know what? It's never cool for parents to abandon children.
Shit, dude. Yeah, that was the forget Max Caster. Like that was the most controversial line of all entire last week.
Yeah, I was that was one of the more bizarre promos that we have seen in some time. House of Black. It's Malakai Black and Brody King. They're hanging out in their house, playing magic cards, and violence begets violence. And no violence can be created without judgment. And Brody asks who we're waiting for, and Malakai says, a mystery. Yeah. I had to watch this twice. These are like, they talk in like riddles, and you're just trying to like decipher what all of this means.
I'll but give you
essentially,
a lot of...
this was their response to Pentagon Dark from last week.
Okay. Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for being able to transcribe. Like, at this point, years and years of these Aleister Black, Malakai Black promos. So, you know. Yeah. Thank you. But who do you?
These are like so heavily produced. It's like it's honestly hard to kind of make out what he's saying. Like I gotta crank the volume for these two.
Yeah, and part of me thinks I don't think we're supposed to like analyze every single word. Maybe I don't know. I think they're supposed to be vague enough that like you're just supposed to sit back and think, oh, cool, who's the dark figure, like dark shadowy figure, and. Can we
also have that out when someone doesn't like what we say? We're like, you're not supposed to listen to us. You're just supposed to put us on in the background and get the sense of what we're trying to
say.
Well,
we could start speaking in riddle and you know, be dimly lit perhaps and put shit on our faces. But sorry, were they teasing a new member here or were they teasing the arrival of Pentagon?
Well, they said a mystery. So I took that as potentially somebody else joining them.
That's how I took it too. Yeah. And who do you think it is?
Oh, God knows. There's a laundry list of people.
I don't think it's Julia Hart. Did not look like Julia Hart to me. The shadow.
I don't know if Julia Hart is the backup for Pentagon that they're seeking, but all things are possible. Hmm. Then we got the lineup. So for Friday, it is Rampage Slam Dunk. This is the episode that airs at 7 p.m. Eastern time, both in the U.S., and it'll be streaming on TSN Direct at 7 Eastern.
Because they're preempted for basketball?
The All-Star Weekend, yes.
Oh, okay. Slam Dunk. Coverage. Can you not come up with a better name than Slam Dunk?
Three-pointer.
Triple
foul. Adam Cole versus Preston Vance, Jay White against Trent Barretta, Dante Martin against Powerhouse Hobbs in the next qualifying match, and Serena Deeb's five-minute challenge. Dynamite next Wednesday will feature the House of Black against Pentagon and Pac, a face-to-face between Chris Jericho and Eddie Kingston, which is, they've got a high standard to live up to after the face-to-face with Kingston and CM Punk last year.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah.
And the Tag Team Battle Royal, the first of two over the next 2 weeks. So that is what we have for next week. And we heard from Jay White, who cut a promo, and this is his logic, okay? He beat Kenny Omega for the IWGP United States title. And because of that, Kenny Omega left New Japan. So if Jay White had not beaten Kenny Omega for this United States championship, there would be no AEW. So AEW, you're welcome.
I think it's about as sound for a heel's logic as we've heard in the history of heels cutting stupid promos, right?
Like, I was a little curious by this because I want to look at the timeline because it was like Kenny was like your IWGP champion like right before he left. And
right.
He ends up like the US title, he had lost to Jay White like a year before that.
That is very true. If anything, I mean,
he lost
Tanahashi,
like,
right?
Tanahashi created AEW, did he not?
Yeah, pretty much.
Tanahashi should like show up and say like, listen, fucker, you knife pervert.
I mean, the other explanation, of course, is, you know, it's Jay White trying to familiarize himself with the AEW audience who may have never seen his work and probably trying to, you know, put seeds in everybody's mind for that future Kenny Omega match as well.
Mm-hmm. So that would have been really tough. Like if Kenny Omega had not come, then they would have done that first press conference, announced AEW, and then they would have had to do another press conference and say, you know what? We're taking it back. We couldn't get Kenny Omega. He's staying in New Japan. Company's done.
Yeah, because he wasn't in that.
He wasn't there at the beginning.
You're right.
Because his contract still had a couple of whatever it was, weeks. So it was his announcement was a little bit delayed.
Well, you know, wrestling fans have memories, but they are somewhat cloudy memories. So maybe
I think wrestling fans have great memories. It's heels that sometimes have poor memories that fans will remind them of. So Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin was our main event for the TNT Championship. And this was an entertaining match between these two. Their third singles match in AEW. Darby is 2-0 against Sammy going into this one. This saw some incredible stuff here. Sammy Guevara just, he sold his knee for a significant amount of this. Allin was like bending the knee from the Tree of Woe position, then applying a single leg crab. And Guevara just sits up from the Tree of Woe into a one-man Spanish fly off the top, but comes down badly on the right knee. And this is when we saw the sequence that was supposed to climax with the crossroads with Guevara going for it, but Allin stopped him. And this was like our most like the only reference, I would say, to Cody on this show.
Yeah, he blocked the crossroads and then he jumped for a springboard, which to me looked like it might have been a disaster kick. And then they ended in a figure four, which I think is another, you know, signature Cody move. And I mean, it's not blatant enough that I can definitively say that that's what they were going for. But
well, the crossroads was like the clear one to me. Like, that certainly seemed like what he was going for.
And with both men, I think, you know, having and for this being the TNT Championship, which I think as much as they, you know, try to play off as the Brody Lee title, I think, you know, in everybody's mind, it really is the Cody Rhodes Championship. So it would make sense if this was a tribute spot.
And very much like Cody is very linked to both of these guys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah.
So then while they're in the figure four, they start trading slaps, doing like the Boss Rutten Frank Shamrock spot. Guevara gets out. The GTH gets countered into the Last Supper for a two count. Twisting Stunner, and Guevara is sent to the rope. And this is when Sammy Guevara, while he's on the floor, Allen goes for a Lope into a cutter on the floor. And this looked incredible.
Absolutely.
We're adding cutter of the year for the awards this year. Because there's already like four of them, and we're only in mid-February.
Totally, yeah. It feels like we went a week without like any cutter where we're just, you know, losing our minds.
The Blake Christian one and Jack Cartwheel, they were like, okay, let's take cutters off for a few weeks. We got to recover from that one.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Huge swanton. Guevara misses on the edge of the apron. Allen then sets him up for the coffin drop when Jose the Translator appears. Sting goes after him. They go into the crowd, allowing Andrade to appear, and he crotches Darby, but he's got the iPad, and he nails Darby. This is the world's heaviest, most destructive iPad in the world because grown men are unconscious from this iPad. The referee misses it. Guevara just shrugs his shoulders. He takes Darby, hits the GTH while limping, and pins Darby in 14 minutes and 50 seconds.
Great match. Absolutely great. You know, like the last time Sammy had a title defense, I mean, I was kind of critical of, you know, him having taped ribs, but not really selling the effects of the taped ribs throughout. And that certainly was not the case here. You know, this was a match that featured a lot of him selling his knee, and he did it, I thought, like really, really well. Unbelievable action when there had to be, but I thought they did a good job conveying that injury. And, you know, I think it was like a next level type of match that it's so interesting watching all of these like chapters of them. Cause like the first time we saw this match, I think we were all pretty excited, but like, you know, we didn't have the history with these two. The crowd didn't have the history with these two by this point. I mean, they're bona fide main eventers that the crowd absolutely loves. And I don't even think they've hit their peaks yet. So, I look forward to the next one.
I think it'd be a really cool idea because like it doesn't always like they do so few rematches that when you do this, you can make it like a big deal when it is like a third meeting over the course of 3 years between these two. Mm-hmm. And to me, like throw up those matches on their YouTube channel in the week of, like these guys naturally do callbacks and such, not just these two, but like so many times when we see the few rematches here that I think that would be kind of a driver just for their YouTube channel to, you know, get people accustomed with like the AEW library that's there. But I think people, you don't really have a home for all of these matches.
No. I mean, not until they have a streaming service that, you know, supports their library. But what inevitably when they do that and they start, you know, creating specials, I think it'd be great to have, you know, these two sit down and talk about their rivalry.
And then Matt Hardy runs in and attacks Darby. Guevara gets into the ring, chasing Matt Hardy away. But this allows Andrade to use the iPad on Guevara from behind. And he takes both TNT titles, hoists them in the air. Sting returns with the bat, which I don't know if that's any match for the iPad. And Andrade leaves with Matt Hardy with the possession of both TNT championships that Guevara has been wearing.
Yeah, I don't know if an iPad is like, you know, the heaviest Apple
item. He needs a better weapon. I think the iPad is like first of all, like we're past iPads in like modern technology, are we not? Like it feels 10 years ago.
No, people use iPads. Are you kidding me? But they're thin. They're thinner. Okay. I would choose like an Apple Pencil, you know, jab somebody in the eye with the Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
I mean, I've broken MacBooks, and I don't know if I'd recommend those because I think those things, they shatter way too easily to hurt. Or how about an iPod? You remember, like maybe like a nice 64 gig iPod.
Where are you going to find an iPod?
Like a pawn shop. I don't know. Like a retro store. Not an iPod mini, John. Like maybe a first generation iPod. Like it just like a brick of a hard drive, you know, straight to the head.
I tried to buy an iPad like a month ago. And dude, these things are like they're not like readily available anymore. It's like
what did you try to buy? Did you try the Apple Store?
I was looking online. Like it was like very difficult just to get like a, you know, a standard iPad.
What are they, like a low in stock or something? Maybe it's a chip thing.
All right. Regardless, they're going to be battling for iPads and titles.
You know, clearly he doesn't care about his. You can offer some.
I mean, yeah, he just broke his here, and it's still effective though as a weapon even after it breaks. That was our ending here. It seems like we're going What are you just seeing a singles program here with Andrade and Guevara? Do you see Darby involved in any of this?
Yeah, I mean, the whole story has been, you know, Andrade and Guevara, has it not? So maybe he challenges unsuccessfully for the belt first, and then we get our Darby Andrade feud, because that seems to be the more story has been put towards Andrade and Darby, right?
Maybe Darby gets Matt Hardy.
Darby and Matt Hardy. Yeah, perhaps. Or maybe
Hardy Darby.
Ugh, it's going to be tough. Or a tag match. Hey, by the way, yeah, so we never really mentioned it, but yeah, when Matt Hardy left the ring last week, Excalibur did mention, you know, something to the effect of, oh, like, what erratic behavior. So, of course, you know, the whole Jeff Hardy thing. But
I think everyone's expecting Jeff Hardy once his 90 days are up.
Which is when?
Very soon. I think it's like early. I don't know the date off the top of my head. It's like early March.
Would it be before the pay-per-view?
It's either the Wednesday. Or it's either like right before or right after. I don't know if it's in time for the pay-per-view. We can probably look. They've got their match announced with Cardona and Brian Myers.
It was December?
Yes.
December 9th?
December 9th. So you're looking around that date for March.
Interesting. Okay.
So it might be right after the pay-per-view.
Okay.
All right.
It's hard to do math on live on air, so I'm not even going to try. Okay, I got it here. Thankfully, there are websites that do this. 90 days from December 9th would be March 9th. Hey, March 9th, your birthday. What a birthday present.
Is that a Wednesday?
It is not. Thursday.
Oh, okay. No, it's a Wednesday.
Shit, I'm looking at 2023. I'm sorry.
Oh, wait, it's 2022, eh?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Okay. This is terrific radio. Yeah, it is a Wednesday. Holy shit.
Well, there you go.
Wow. Interesting.
I thought this was a really entertaining episode of Dynamite. I couldn't believe how fast-paced it was. I thought the most, like, they did like a lot of like non-wrestling segments, but again, like, if it's great segments, then that's awesome. I don't think you need to necessarily have wrestling start to finish on a 2-hour show. Punk segment was great. I thought that the Danielson Moxley segment was pretty great. You had Hangman and Adam Cole. Like, all of this, like, you're seeing all of these programs come together for the pay-per-view. Really enjoyed Danielson and Lee Moriarty. I thought that was terrific. The main event was terrific. And yeah, this was a very, very fun episode of Dynamite.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And, you know, a great build towards the important matches at Revolution, good in-ring content. So I don't really know what much more you can ask for. Maybe other than commercial-free first hour, you know? Commercial-free hours.
The way they have the picture-in-picture, like, it pretty much is like, you have some AEW on your screen pretty much the whole 2 hours.
Well, for a lot of people who subscribe to Fight, yeah, it is a commercial-free show every week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, feedback time. We're going to go to forum.postwrestling.com. Starting things off, Steve from Cambridge. Moxley and Danielson are pure stars. They know exactly how to make people care. The Cobra Kai surprise was awesome. Mid-card page, once again. Literally the middle of the show. That's not how to position your champion, no matter what the hottest program is. Adam Cole's hands were so spray tanned. What? How the hell are you paying attention to the man's hands and what shade they are? I can't remember the last Jake Hager match. Women's match was great. Love the post-match too. I don't watch New Japan. Who did the finger thing first, DMD or Jay White? Okay. Great episode, says Steve.
Jay White, I mean, the Jay White does a finger thing?
I've never noticed that. Literally never noticed that.
I mean, it wouldn't be the same as Britt Baker, so I don't know. And like, you know, I don't, like, Hangman Page main evented last week, you know?
Yeah.
He had a speaking segment this week, and okay, sure, I guess they could have put that up very first, but I mean, it's CM Punk and MJF, and you're coming right off the Big Bang Theory. It'd be silly to, and not every single week I think you're going to have the champion up there. Yeah, like, when we look at the Revolution and the card that they're shaping up for it, I do think Cole versus Page would probably be third from the top if they're doing Moxley and Danielson and Punk and MJF. But what are you going to do? Not give the belt to Page? You know, like they're using these belts to elevate guys so that someday, you know, Hangman Page can get up to a Bryan Danielson or CM Punk level. But when you're competing for ratings, I mean, you know, the guy can't be in a talking segment main eventing the show with Adam Cole every single week.
And you're not going to end the show with a segment like that. Like it necessitated like the like being in the middle there with Adam Cole. It's like, you know, did we need to end Monday's Raw with Bobby Lashley doing that, you know, six-person interview segment at the end of the show versus the opening segment? No. It was bad in whatever spot it was in. Might as well be first.
Okay, up next, we go to Jay from Colorado, who says, what a show. It was fun all the way through, and as usual, the 2 hours flew by. The highlight for me was the Thunder Rosa-Mercedes Martinez match. Both women brought their A-game, and the surprise appearance from Martin Cove was awesome. Everybody loving Martin Cove.
Huge.
Sean. As my wife and I just watched an episode of Cobra Kai before Dynamite, I watched the show in VR again tonight. And to answer John's query last week, yes, you can talk to everybody. People cheer and boo the wrestlers. They sing along to their entrance music and make fun of the commercials. It really is a lot of fun. It's just like watching live with friends or strangers. Tonight we were in a movie theater. I've included a short 15-second clip of what the environment looks like for those trying to visualize it. He included a 15-second video here in the feedback thread. Wow, this is wild. This is crazy. It's like you're sitting in a theater with like holograms of other people next to you as you're watching AEW. That's strange and bizarre and kind of interesting.
Johnny, I love this episode of Dynamite. Lee and Danielson was a match I really wanted when Lee signed, and the match did not disappoint. I love matches like that, and I can't wait to see when Danielson finally wrestles Zack Sabre Jr. and Jonathan Gresham. The women's match was brutal, and also loved that the heels saw the hesitation from Mercedes in attacking Thunder post-match and didn't wait for the betrayal. The main event was insane. These two are meant to be rivals. We saw them wrestle each other on the first Revolution and now for the TNT title. Maybe in 3 years it will be for the world title. Guessing Buddy Matthews is the next member for the House of Black. While I did enjoy the Punk promo, AEW needs to chill a bit with opening Dynamite with a promo. I thought that Punk promo was awesome at the start of the show.
No
issue with that.
I mean, you know, your first segment is the most important segment, and I think often you want to lead with the most the segment with the highest star power. And at this moment, it's Punk and MJF. I forget what it was last week. What was it last week, John?
Last week it was like the setup for the tag match later in the night with Punk and MJF again.
Yeah, like I mean, I think you have to have, you know, somebody on the level of a CM Punk like in that opening segment. So we'll see what the ratings are like, though. I mean, you know, that'll ultimately determine, you know, how much they use the tactic. We got a Brian from New Jersey who really enjoyed the show. I thought it had little to no filler with its matches and promos, and it laid out some clear directions towards the pay-per-view, specifically all of the title matches we could be getting. Great start with Punk's promo, and Danielson came off like a megastar, making the crowd go wild for sequences he's been doing since the mid-2000s. Moxley is not too far behind. The only mentions of Cody Rhodes were in relation to the last dog collar match, so they really took the high road. I can see Buddy Matthews as the newest member of the House of Black, but it's anyone's guess.
All right. We continue on here. Let's go down to Scrump. I brought my girlfriend here as a Valentine's Day gift and was happy they happened to book Darby versus Sammy as the main event. The crowd was nonstop cheering for both, and Melissa Joan Hart, who was sitting next to us, went pale at the realization that Darby was about to crash into her. And where do you guys see them taking Sammy? He feels lost amidst the inner circle turmoil, and there's no immediate program for him at Revolution. I think they set up his program tonight. I mean, it's obviously going with Andrade in some form or fashion.
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like he's kind of steering clear from the inner circle drama right now. But that's always something he can go to. So
I don't think you want to lump him into that. I think that's just he wouldn't be like the focal person there. Not needed in this split anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, eventually, like if they do a full on breakup, I think he would have to at least have, you know, some sort of presence. We got a Jesse from the Six who says another good Dynamite tonight. Andrade's fit was 10 out of 10. Like you, John, I've also never seen the Karate Kid nor Cobra Kai, so I didn't know who that old dude was. Where does that cutter place in the 2022 cutter rankings? Was it top 5, John?
I don't know. Maybe.
Also, is Miro injured? If not, keeping him off TV this long is criminal. I was hoping he might appear tonight because they were in Nashville. I like Sammy, but I think it's a mistake ending Miro's TNT title reign when they did. Yeah, what is up with Miro right now? Any idea?
Wasn't he dealing with an injury, but I think that's he's through that now. And it might just be a case of like, you know, we've got our pay-per-view set now, so it's kind of hard to put someone in. Yeah, this was his hometown. But, you know, you've probably like, you know, Tony Khan, he's probably got his pay-per-view is completely booked now. And it's kind of tough. Like who on this show, like, again, every segment pretty much had a direction towards the pay-per-view of where you can see these programs going. So it's kind of I would imagine it's just a timing thing that, you know, probably if he's ready to go, then you'll have to wait till the pay-per-view's done.
And I have a feeling whenever he does return, like he's going to go on a tear and like go on a big winning streak, you know, on his way to challenging probably for the world championship. And unless you're going to start that build right now, and I don't see why you would when you're trying to build so many other people, what's the point of introducing him? Maybe, I mean, could you see him for the Revolution ladder match?
But if
he's not going to win, then what's the point?
That's it. Like, I would much rather, like, instead of just, you know, making sure he's got a spot on the pay-per-view, like, all these guys want to be on the pay-per-view, but if it's just so that his body can be present, I'd much rather, like, something of substance for when he's ready to return than just, you know, another guy in the ladder match. Like, if they have a plan, sure. But if not, then just wait till you have something strong to go with. Next one we will go to is from Ben. Lee Moriarty and Danielson was excellent, and I'd really like to see Moxley and Danielson create a faction. I think this would be a fun way to build a feud between the two and would be a great way to elevate Moriarty and others. Fewer flips and a bit more psychology from Sammy in his match with Darby. I wonder if he has been paying attention to some of the comments from the likes of Billy Gunn about a lack of psychology in some AEW matches. I enjoyed it, and I'm really enjoying Sammy's runs with the TNT title. He's super talented and smooth in the ring as he adds a little more psychology to the incredible moves. He's going to be a main event level sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree that, like, I think, I don't know if I would say, like, the TNT title run has been great so far. Certainly with his last couple, you know, Dynamite matches, yeah, you could definitely say that. That Cody match was incredible. This match was really good. And some of the other ones were really great, too. But I think we've been lacking a bit more of the great character work that we've seen from Sammy Guevara in the Inner Circle. I think maybe that just comes with being a babyface versus being a heel. But, I mean, the psychology comment is also one that I think is valid. And we saw a world of difference. He seems to me like somebody who probably can do that stuff. He just maybe chooses not to for whatever reason. But you know, this title I think is there for people to, not just, you know, get a bit of TV time, but to also be under pressure to try to elevate their games to become fully formed, complete wrestlers. And maybe that's what Sammy needs at the moment. Final comment of the night goes to the person who will be joining me on Friday for Rewind of SmackDown, Kate from Montreal, who says, in the aftermath of the Cody departure, it felt like there was some added pressure for AEW to produce a good show tonight, and they delivered. I didn't think a single segment missed the mark. If we're getting Wardlow, Keith Lee, and depending on the Rampage match, Hobbs in the ladder match, I hope that they buy some reinforced ladders. The card for Revolution is shaping up nicely, and I'm curious to see how it fills out.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for your feedback and tuning into the show tonight, whether it be live or downloading it afterwards. Again, both of us will be back just separately on Thursday. I'll be live at 1 Eastern with David Bixenspan and Brandon Thurston, and in Way, live at 3 Eastern for the Wellness Policy with Jordan Goodman and Neil Flanagan. So you can go check out those shows on Thursday and plenty more at postwrestling.com, and that will wrap up Rewind to Dynamite.